The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the program today, Afternoons with Mike, here on the Shepherd Radio Network. Today, I have as my guest somebody that I've just been able to meet for the first time. I have Dorothy Logan with Freedom Academy. Dorothy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you're one of these people that know our good friend Joe Sharp, and I think it was through him that we learned about you and what you're doing. And your background, your story, being one who would study political science, you're a major in that, got your degrees all in that field. This is the time, and if there ever was a time, that is a field that is of great interest, because I think there was a point in time where, people would say, my major is political science, and they would think, oh, okay, you're going to be a teacher, which is what you are. But back in that day, the world, it just didn't seem to be as applicable to the world as it is today. Everywhere we look, there's some sort of political struggle. There are divisions in our own nation, I think, unlike we've ever seen before. So this had to be driving you in a particular way, right?
Absolutely. Lately, you say in the contemporary world, everything is politics, because politics is just a power struggle. And what we're seeing constantly in society today is you talk about division, and so there's always going to be that conflict. Mm-hmm. And so politics is the power struggle. Politics is conflict. And people say, what is political science? I said, well, it's a soft science. It's not like mathematics or chemistry or biology where you can mm-hmm. plug it in. But unfortunately, what we've seen coming out of the last few decades is they're trying to make it into a science. If we can just come up with the right formula and you will agree with us and we can plug all the variables in, we can get that utopian society that we're looking for.
That American dream that people thought this country used to be about. And it seems to be that this country is as divided, again, as we said earlier, as it has ever been. And I'm not so sure the people that are in charge right now would even be aiming for anything at all that the population of America would either adhere to or desire.
That's probably true. What I fear is that the real division, which most of the American people are not seeing, is not between left and right or between whatever divisions we want to put mm-hmm. up there, because there's so many. But really, there is a kind of a political elite and the rest of us. And the political elite is trying to still play the game the way they've always played it, using the votes and the positions and the passions and the mm-hmm. emotions of the rest of us. And I believe that Americans need to be reminded that the American dream or their passions or their love of this country, what was it based upon? Because right now, all we see is a lot of hatred coming out of the conflict and the division. And so what we see our leaders doing in government, no matter the level of government, but what we're seeing there is not trying to unify the people under this great American ideal, but instead fueling the flames that they believe will help them maintain or increase their own power.
Mm. Wow. This is going to be a fun discussion, and I think a helpful one for a lot of people, because you're coming to this not only from an educational background. You've studied the foundations of not only America, but other countries as well. And like you said, you're right. I mean, whether or not we want to admit it, the word politics is something that is of importance. A lot of people say, you know, politics and religion, we're not allowed here around the Christmas table, but that's just not practical anymore, because we're living it every time we go to the grocery store, every time we try to fill up with gas like I did yesterday at Costco. and found that I couldn't even get near the line. It was, unless I wanted to invest about an hour in waiting, it was not going to happen. And so it's affecting us. Things that are going on in the political sphere are really affecting what you and I do on a daily basis, on a really an hour by hour basis. So we've got to have at least a cursory understanding of what's happening in our country today. And that's why I'm glad you're here. Now, you've studied back when you were looking at all of this. Did you ever dream that the country that you were living in when you're doing all of this would look like it looks today?
Absolutely not. I actually thought that even 9/11, there was this brief moment in time where everyone woke up. We're at war. It's a war of ideas. It's an ideological war. And we all came unified together, understanding mm-hmm. what it was to be an American, what freedom really was, who we are as a country. And over the last two decades, we've watched whatever kind of unity, like the September 12th effect, right? Whatever type of unity we had coming out of that has kind of dissipated. I remember back then it was almost as though, you know, prayer back by popular demand kind of thing. We realized where our foundations were. People wanted answers, spiritual answers, but answers founded in truth. And what I've watched happen over the last two decades is that we're no longer looking for answers founded in truth, but who agrees with me? I have to be right all the time. And so we're just kind of reaching out and saying, what feels right? What agrees with me? And I have just such a broken heart for where we stand as a people, as a country, as individuals, because when you lose sight of an absolute standard against which to measure, you find us where we are today.
And where we are today is a concerning place. And I'm praying that the people who are either in charge, and maybe if they're listening to some of the voices that are going up in this country, maybe they'll heed. There's not a lot of confidence that I have that they're going to heed that. And so were it not for the fact that I'm a believer and that I trust God and his sovereignty, I would have a difficult time sleeping at night. It's not because I'm going to bed just smiling and thanking God for not only, which I do, believe me, I still love our country. I do love our country. Grateful that we have the freedoms that we still have. My concern is, how long are we going to have them? That's one of the big concerns that, again, were it not for God and were it not for his grace, it would be much more troubling than it really is right now. Now, you mentioned 9/11, and I know that that's been a kind of a real touchstone for you. It's really been almost like a defining event in your career. Is that too strong to say?
No, not at all. That event, 9/11, and the fallout from that, more particularly why we went to war, right? Why did we go into Afghanistan and why did we go into Iraq? But that actually launched a new era in my own life where I discovered I loved public speaking. I also realized how little the American people knew in general about the reasoning behind what we were doing and why we were doing it, but also why 9/11 happened in the first place. And
well, why don't you start there? Give us from your standpoint, maybe what you would talk to your students in your classes about if they asked you the question, why did 9/11 happen? What would you say?
Wow, that's a big question. But the reasoning behind 9/11, there was a lot of stuff that came out, a lot of interviews from people from the Middle East or from in the Muslim community. And there were talking heads on the news saying this is about economic issues or they're unhappy. But really, Islam, and I hate to put it this way, is a totalitarian political system, which is completely at odds with the liberty-minded, principled foundation of the United States. So what was really happening here was a clash of ideology. And we had in 1993, the World Trade Center mm-hmm. was bombed. Six people died, and the goal of the person who set those charges was not met. The whole point was to take down the one tower, have it hit the other tower, and have them fall. And I think what Americans don't understand, because our attention spans are about 30 seconds, is that what happened in is 7-8 years is nothing mm-hmm. when they're trying to accomplish a goal.
Well, they worked a long time on 9/11.
Yes. And the World Trade Center was a symbol of the West, mm-hmm. a symbol of what the United States stood for, whether it was capitalism or free market or freedom in general. It was in New York City. This is like a cosmopolitan kind of city. And so when you look at what happened 9/11, it goes back much farther than even 1993. You have to understand that the Serbians know that the mindset can last hundreds of years for these people. Americans, when I say 9/11 woke us up for about 30 seconds.
It seems that it was about that long. Now, I know that you're right. When you say it woke us up, I was seeing things in 2001 that I had not seen really maybe in 20, 30 years or longer. People were driving around with flags on their cars, like, you know, pinned onto their windshield or their side windows. And there was a we're all in this together type of unity that was going on in the country. And whether you were Republican or Democrat, you were thankful that George Bush was leading as it appeared that he was. And it did look like it was going to have a maybe galvanizing effect in our country that was going to be maybe long, long lasting. And it doesn't seem like it lasted longer than a couple of months at most.
Exactly.
I'm not sure it lasted that long.
It lasted longer than that because we did have the mandate from the American people to go mm-hmm, into Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And when you look at how Congress voted, it was overwhelming. This is a nonpartisan issue. This is what we need to do. And they are following the desires of their constituents, of course. And then even the war in Iraq, which people we're looking at, why are we going to Iraq instead of Iran? That's another mm-hmm. whole conversation we could have today as well. But why are we going into Iraq? There was still insurmountable support for that conflict as well.
Well, because the intel said there were weapons of mass destruction, and most people believe there were.
And there were.
And they were hidden. And, you know, it's like right before your very eyes, you can't see the forest for the trees. And so, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that intel was not wrong.
No. And the way the media covered it, this was also, I think 9/11 started this 24/7. We have to have big news all the time for these cable news networks. But the way they covered it, again, swiftly dove into political division and who can we attack and who can we blame, and the death count kept going up of how many soldiers had died. So I do think, even talking about 2020, 9/11, 2020, the media plays a huge role in mm-hmm. how we frame not just the narrative but the entire perspective of society and how we're going to approach it and how our feelings what feelings we're going to have about what our government is doing or what's happening in the world.
So we go back to that original question, what caused 9/11? And you see that there's this attack on the image of America, freedom, attack on capitalism, free trade, the West in general. And then this word jihad, which brings in almost like a religious bent to the side of motivation that would be driving those that were like the radical Muslim people that were behind 9/11. So jihad, what does that mean to a person like you?
Jihad is a struggle, which if you compare it to like Hitler's Mein Kampf, right? My struggle. Essentially, jihad is the same thing. And it's our struggle in the way of God. That's what jihad means. Our struggle in the way of God. And there's ways that can be, it can be interpreted as a personal struggle. Like we all have like Alcoholics Anonymous, or we struggle with our spiritual walk. That is, they have jihad as well. That is jihad. However, there's political jihad, which is what we were facing in 2001, before that and since then. But political jihad, there's defensive political jihad, which means we have the right to protect our Muslim lands from any outside invaders. And then there's offensive political jihad, which is essentially we are called to bring the rest of the world under Islam, to submit it to Allah. So this offensive political jihad is what Islamists or jihadists are engaged in. They believe this is a mandate of God to bring the rest of the world under God's submission.
And when you say God, we're not talking about our God. We're talking about Allah. We're talking about their God that they serve, and they are pushing Allah onto all other countries. And that part of this whole struggle is as old as the Bible.
Absolutely. We do have to be careful in that the word Allah means God. Christians in Arabic Christians pray to Allah because that is God. However, this is not the all-loving, merciful, compassionate God. And one way I have framed it is, I would rather serve my God who tells me to love you, my enemy, than to serve your God who tells you to kill me, your enemy. This is not the same. This is not, they do believe in a monotheistic God, but it is not the Lord Almighty.
Right. Not Jehovah.
No.
Not the great Jehovah. You know, this struggle that you're describing, that political scientists like yourself really have to face and try to give an answer to, not only students teaching as it is. One of the problems is because we as Americans are really deficient in our understanding of our own history and the political atmosphere that this country was birthed in, and maybe you could say put up against what we moved away from in England. So, you know, the political struggle is what gave birth to this very nation. But I would dare say that in the year 2021, today's students have no idea of the true story or the motivations behind why America was ever founded to begin with. You mentioned in a discussion earlier, before we began taping this program, you mentioned the Great American Experiment. I've heard of that phrase many times, that the founders really were aware that the founding of this nation, with its ideals, with its convictions, was a sort of an experiment, one that had never really been successfully carried through by any other nation, because it would just be overthrown.
Right. We were given a republic if we could keep it. We were given a constitution that was suitable only for a religious and moral people. We were established upon foundational principles that only worked if we understood them.
And we're going to have to take a pause on that, because that's where I want to pick up. If we understand it, oh, help us, Lord, to understand the freedoms that we were birthed under in this nation. My guest today is Dorothy Logan, and we'll be back with her in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. Welcome back to the program. On the program today, I have as my guest Dorothy Logan, Freedom Academy. Dorothy is a professor, and she's taught at West Palm Beach, at the Palm Beach Atlantic University. And she also lives in the Lake Wales area with her husband, Randy, and a couple of kids, and a real heart and love for teaching, and really coming to the point of seeing that one of the motivations that drove you to do what you're doing today is this belief that many in our country don't realize what we should know. We don't know we're missing what we're missing. And I think that is a real problem when you talk about the things that were just almost freely giving away right now in our country. The freedoms are going out the window at a high rate of speed. And we got to get a hold of that. And before we took the break, you came up with this expression that you said, and we, as we were talking about the founders of our great country, they were looking at this thing as an experiment of sort, a country that is a republic that would remain that way if we keep it. So go ahead and dive into that a bit more.
Well, part of the reason I look at American society is because of the students that come through my door and their perception of American society that comes through that door. But we're a republic if we can keep it. Everyone thinks we're a democracy. We need to protect democracy. I could talk for an entire hour about how we should not be protecting democracy.
Do you think people even understand that that word democracy is not the same as a republic?
No, I do not believe they understand.
I don't think they do either. In fact, our own leaders, you know, even those that would say that they are found, you know, that they're really believers in the founding principles, they use the word democracy.
They do, because I believe, again, they want this to be a democracy, which is the exact opposite of what the founders wanted. They were trying to avoid democracy and run as far away from a democracy as possible. The way they set up the Constitution the second time around, but the way they set up the Constitution was in essence brilliant, because they understood that man is corrupt. Man is fallen, mm-hmm. and power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But taking that line of thinking, they disperse the power as much as possible. In democracy, you have ultimate power in one side. And so they wanted to avoid the tyranny that comes with democracy by dispersing the power as far and wide as possible. On top of that, they understood the corrupt nature of man. And I look at the Constitution as an artificial conscience of our government, because the deliberation should be there. You have to get more ideas need to be expressed. The debate has to happen. But with democracy, one side takes over. Mm-hmm. And this is why they talk about democracy. They might know that we're a republic, but they want us to be a democracy, because that means if their party is in power, they have ultimate control over what happens in this country, or even at lower levels of government. But there's hundreds of thousands of different governments, and none of them. And because of that, we are a republic. And so you are correct in saying we still have freedoms. We still have more freedoms than we would have if we lived somewhere else. But when we start looking to the very top, when we start looking to government to solve our problems, when we do not want them to deliberate, we don't want them to examine through their conscience what's best for the American people or what's best for this country, the American people have abdicated their responsibility as well. So our leaders don't understand, but maybe they do. They just want us to be a democracy, and they mm-hmm. want the American people to want us to be a democracy. Because then they have the will of their constituents. They have the power, the authority given to them by people that agree mm-hmm. that they want this to be a democracy.
So part of what keeps that sense of being a republic present and operating as it was intended would be things such as the Electoral College, which is something that most people today are just willing to just chuck it and just to throw it right out the window and you know, get rid of it. And they don't realize that that is one of those major, with regards to especially a major election like a president. It's what makes the difference. And it keeps us from this mob rule. You know, when you think of other phrases that go into this whole thing, my mind goes to like the flyover states. You know, you look at the political map and you have these big, big, long blocks of the United States that would be conservative. And that's where the heartland is. But then you have the pockets of the big cities where the population centers are. And were it not for the Electoral College, those centers where the liberal mindset would be most freely and welcomed and all of that, that's what would be guiding our elections, if you will.
in one way to look at it is, yes, that's exactly what would happen. You have a handful of counties, a few hundred counties that are, go blue, for instance, where you have thousands of mm-hmm. counties yes. that go red. So you would think that would we allow a few hundred counties, a very small geographical area within this vast nation of ours, to control the policy for the entire country? Would we even really want that to happen? But at the other side, on the other side, the Electoral College creates problems that only exist because it exists. If you take away the Electoral College, who's to say there would be a majority that would vote for one single candidate? If you divide the vote up amongst four candidates, mm-hmm. would we have a president who garnished only like 25% of the vote? And would we have an even more radical shift in one way or in one direction or another? So what I find troubling is what's going on in Congress now, trying to establish all the rules for the states and how they will approach their elections, mm-hmm. because they keep the Electoral College in place, which means it maintains the two-party system, which maintains this visage of democracy, while at the same time putting the power of the outcome of that election in the hands of essentially 535 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we are states, after all. We are the United States, and states' rights, that plays into all of this as well. And we're seeing right now, I'm sure you would agree with this, we're seeing right now the biggest, perhaps the biggest standoff between governors and states and the federal government that one we've ever seen in our lifetime.
Yes. My husband and I, we want to spend summers up on Lake Ontario in New York. And last, in 2020, New York didn't even want us, right?
Yeah.
Because of the big fight between Cuomo and DeSantis. And yet we're watching in these, I have to say, I'm very grateful to be living in Florida during this time. DeSantis appears to want to protect our liberty. He understands what choice actually means. He mm-hmm. understands what rights truly are. But when you see these standoffs between governors, between states, but also between the federal government and the state government, there is this tension that I don't know how to address it. I've been talking to a lot of people who wonder, is this going to come to civil war? And I said, even if it's not a violent civil war, right? There is this ideological war again where...
Well, we're so evenly divided. Yes. It's almost 50-50 right now.
Yes. And again, though, what can we unify around? Mm-hmm. Because how would we divide the country? There's not a latitude going across the country that says, okay, if you believe one way, you live above this line. And if you believe another, you live below it. But at the same time, federalism is a great tool because it does allow us freedom of choice. We can decide, we can vote with our feet. Who do we want to get our tax dollars? Which states, which counties, which cities do we want to get our tax dollars? Where do we want to send our children to school? Which school district is best for us? This is the brilliance, again, behind federalism. It allows for choices. So not only are elections all local, even presidential elections are local elections, but we can, at least in theory, we can vote with our feet.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're seeing a lot of time right now, right, where people are voting with their feet. They're moving out of some of these big zones like California, out of New York, and a lot of them are coming to Florida, Texas, other states that really are more free and more welcoming to them. But as they're doing that, this is what's amazing to me, Dorothy, is that we've just heard about California doubling down on the mask mandate. And so now in California, you can't be indoors without a mask. You've got it. You can't be in any indoor public facility without a mask. And so my thought is that what is it going to take? What will it take for a state in our country like California or maybe in New York for them to get past this? Do you believe we can get past this debacle that we've been in the last 2 years?
I'm not sure. I was looking at the recall in California to see what was going to come of that, because they like to say, well, the voters have spoken. And what Newsom got out of that election was, I'm doing the right thing. Lockdowns and masking and mandates.
Bring it on.
And bring it on. I'm going to double down even more. And so what I see happening is that people really do have to understand how this impacts them. Because as Mark Twain says, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics. But at the same time, anecdotal evidence and our life experience, that defines everything. Mm-hmm. And so I think people who are in these cities where, you know, looters aren't being prosecuted, so stores are closing, or you have lockdowns and small businesses are closing, mid-sized businesses are closing, large businesses are leaving. I think the average American middle-class individual has to open their eyes and say, enough is enough. And this is impacting me in a very negative way, because in the end, that's all most Americans care about, is how does this impact me? Mm-hmm. And so until everyone, it has to be everyone, kind of opens up their eyes and says, this is impacting me in such a negative way, we cannot let it go on this way.
Dorothy Logan is my guest. She's from Freedom Academy, a professor from PBA, Palm Beach Atlantic. A question that I have of you, you're coming obviously at this not only from a lot of brilliant years of study, and I'm grateful you've invested as you have, but also from that point of view of being a believer, a believer in Jesus Christ, who is your Lord and Savior, as he is mine. And with those, that background, that makes you one that, it makes me want to ask this question, you know, do you see our country right now being able to rebound in this coming, either will this coming midterm election make a difference? Is it going to be a pushback? What are you thinking will happen?
I would not rule it out, because I do believe in the rubber band effect, right? You pull something so far in one direction and it can snap back. But I feel as though there's a lot of challenges or obstacles to coming back, and especially in one election. There are a lot of voters who believe that the system is broken. They don't trust the voting system. That could cause them not to go vote. That could cause them not to believe in the results that end up at the end of the election. At the same time, we are so inundated with, again, changing definitions and changing history. And this idea, so where I come from is, I believe every little t truth points to the big t truth. As a Christian, as a believer, I believe every little t truth points to the big t truth, which is why I think it's so important to have someone out there declaring the truth, declaring the little t truth. Because if once you start examining the little t truth, it will always point you in the direction of the big T truth. But because we've lost sight of the big T truth, because we've rejected the big T truth, it's so much harder for people to even recognize what the little t truth is. So in the large scheme of things, I believe it's possible that we could have that rubber band effect. But I honestly, still in my heart of hearts, we've crossed the Rubicon. We've rejected Christ as a nation. We've rejected big T truth. And we have now systematically decided to reject little t truth as well.
Mm. Well, that we're praying will not be the end of all of this. And I know it's a hard thing for a lot of people to hear, but we have seen a lot go out the window with regard to our liberties. And this whole thing that you just mentioned, which was my next question, we've only got a couple of more minutes here with you, but this issue of a fair and legal and right election, if this is not corrected by 2022, next year, we're really, our nation really is, from the standpoint of as we have known it, could well be decided upon. I mean, a lot of people are saying that, and it's going a direction of that I don't think any of us want, or at least not most of us. We wouldn't want it, but that is a great need, isn't it?
Yes. And that is why tyranny of the majority, it becomes a permanent majority. The political minority no longer has a voice. They have been declared wholly and entirely wrong. And so there is this fear or this concern that if this isn't corrected, demonstrably corrected, that we will, there will be no coming back, not legally, not politically, not through the voting system. The other side of that is it's not just that. So there's Democrats saying that it was fine. It was free. It was the fairest. It was the safest. It was the most secure. If we go down that road, then it delegitimizes every election in the future. It would be better for both sides to say, yes, we need to reexamine this. What went wrong? Why do people believe it was not secure? And how can we demonstrate that it was or that it will be in the future by addressing these particular concerns?
Many people believe if they use those same machines that they used the last time, it will not be secure. And I don't know if that's the case, but that is something we're all going to have to wait and see and do a whole lot of praying for. Dorothy Logan, my guest today from Freedom Academy, thank you so much for coming. And I knew that this was going to be a deep dive into really, really important issues, and you have given us that swim. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. In a moment, we'll be back with Patrick Joint from Toys for Tots. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. Welcome back to the program. On the line with me right now from Marion County, the coordinator for Toys for Tots, Patrick Joint. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here with you.
Well, it's great to have you here on the program with us, Patrick. You know, we hear about Toys for Tots. I know in our own building where our studios are located, we've been gathering toys for weeks now for this very purpose. Give us just a little bit of the history, if you will, of Toys for Tots.
Well, we started in 1947. Major Bill Henderson saw the need that there was a lot of orphaned, World War II orphaned children around Los Angeles. So him and his wife decided to do something about it. And she made a bunch of dolls, handmade dolls and everything, and got some friends together. So they helped a couple hundred children in Los Angeles. And the Marine Corps took notice. And so the very next year, they said, you know what? We're going to run this from now on. So it is the only charity sponsored by the DOD. And we've been doing it for 74 years now. We are in every state and territory in the United States. You know, the famous toy train, Walt Disney himself drew that up.
Isn't that something? So yeah, the history runs deep with this organization.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. There's it used to be that there was a lot more reserve units doing it because you can either be a civilian like myself or a Marine Corps reserve unit like in Orlando. There's a reserve unit there, so they run it. But a lot of other places, they're not having it. So there's about, I would say 820 campaigns throughout the United States and the Virgin Islands, Guam, et cetera. And I would say the overwhelming majority of those are civilians. A lot of them are former Marines, but you don't have to be. But it always helps.
Now, I know you're a vet. Is that the branch that you served in as well?
Yeah, I didn't know there was any other branches besides the Marine Corps.
Oh, okay. I get it. All right. I love it. A former Marine. You guys are gathering all of these toys. And again, this has been going on, like you said, for all of these years. First serving those children left behind from veterans of World War II. When you served in the Marine Corps, I'm sure you heard a lot about Toys for Tots even then, right?
Actually, no, surprisingly. I mean, I'd heard of it, but as far as getting involved with it, it took many years to reach that epicenter. I joined a Marine Corps League locally here, and they had a program where they were splitting it with another campaign here, and it was just, you know, a lot of admin junk. So the next year we had our own, and, you know, we had some problems with somebody running it, and we had to take care of that. And so finally we combined the two campaigns, because what used to be was they would take care of the agencies and I would take care of the schools. And we would both do about, well, we were doing about 9,000, and I think they were doing about 9,000 kids. So, you know, math for Marines says 9 and 9 is 18, but we only jumped up a couple thousand, if that. So there was a lot of double dipping going on. So we stopped that. It streamlined a lot of more stuff. We used to not have a lot of money between us, either one of us. Now that we're one campaign, we get a lot more money, but we're spending a lot more money. And basically, the money comes in and it pretty much goes right back out. I spend it on everything that I need to spend it on. If I need something, admin, like say tags for the bags or the bags themselves, we buy those. I try to get everything donated, first of all. But if that doesn't work, you know, just go out and buy it. We've got a couple of great sponsors with us. Wayne's World Haunted Trail, it's a big thing around here. You should come out to it. The last three weekends of October, they have a haunted trail, and it's $10, 12 and up. It's $5, 12 and under. And they donated, I won't say the number, but it was more than $14,999, and it was less than $15,100.
I'm really glad you kind of left such a wide range there, man.
Yeah, they don't like to know that, but they probably don't. They've been doing this for years. I would say they donated at least well over $150,000 since they've been doing this. They've been doing this for, gosh, I think 15 or 16 years, probably even longer than that. So, you know, folks do that. And all the money that people donate to me here, it stays here in this county. So if you donate to your local Toys for Tots, wherever you are, you know, make sure you're donating not to Toys. Well, let me put it this way. If you donate to Toys for Tots in general, it goes to the fund in Virginia, and they buy us what we need. But if you want your money to stay local, a lot of people like that. Look up the local website. Ours is ocala-fl.toysfortots.org. And you look up that, and you can donate there. And if you donate there, the money's going to stay here in Marion County. But, you know, well, we try to do as many kids as we can. You know, every year it's a struggle, but, you know, we're Marines, so we get it done.
Now, what I like about what you're doing, your organization, like the actual Marine Corps themselves, the Marine Corps is apolitical and non-denominational, so it doesn't matter what background, what affiliation, what church people attend, they can all take part in this, and it is distributed in an amazing, organized fashion. And again, you've got, it's a volunteer army, isn't it? Maybe I should say it's a volunteer Marine Corps.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because that's how we do this. I could care less about your political stance or anything, your gender. It doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, we have in here in Marion County, we have agencies that send us the list. You sign up with the agency, they give us a list, and all we get from them and all we want from them is the age of the child and the gender. That's all we care. So that way we know, okay, we'll give a 3-year-old boy this toy, a 5-year-old girl this toy. That's all we need. It doesn't matter what you are. You know, there's, you know, who cares about that? And it's mm-hmm. not that should be involved. We really strive to do that. I know, you know, yours is a Christian radio station, but, you know, we had to talk about that and make sure that, you know, we can't put that out there, because, you know, it doesn't really matter what my beliefs are for this. It's really in the name, Toys for Tots. It's that simple. We just try to keep, you know, Marines. We just get things done. So give toys to kids.
And with all the people like yourself that work on this program on a volunteer basis, how many months or weeks out of the year are you avidly working on this this campaign?
Well, let's see. That's a good question, and it's a loaded question, I would say. I could do this all year long. There's a lot of stuff to do. I buy toys all year long. If I see a great buy at Sam's or something like that, I'll go out and buy it. And I'm lucky enough that if we have the money in the account, I get it. So that's one thing that I do throughout the year. But October, I would say actually the middle of September till, you know, January 15th, when our report is done, is due. We're pretty much nonstop. There's volunteers that we need. There's more stuff that folks can do. So, you know, if you want to volunteer, we'd be more than happy to help you. Well, there's a few critical jobs that we need to get a hold of people and get to know them. And once we are confident with them, we would let them fly with some of the extremely important jobs. You know, I'm the youngest guy working here, and I'm 52. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, the other guys are, well, they're not old, but they're very, 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 very seasoned individuals. And, you know, but I can't do it without them. Without them, and then the folks that donate, you know, we were at an event and someone was donating there. All I got is change. That change adds up. You know, every little bit helps. I had over $900 in change last year. So it all adds up. Everything that everyone does.
$900 in coin.
Yep. I was the one with the making all the shortages. That was me.
You were the one. That explains a lot. Now, I know that you're right there in the Ocala area and not far from Ocala, of course, the Villages. Do you get a lot of participation from the vets in the Villages?
No, not yet. They have their own campaign, so they take care. They actually do, I think, at least two, if not three counties. They do Sumter Lake and maybe one more. I'm not sure. But they do a lot. They have a massive campaign there. They've got a lot of veterans there that are involved in that. And those guys do a great job as well. They have a golf tournament every year, raise a good chunk of money that way. And, you know, it's for our sponsor. It's not without our sponsor. We had a motorcycle club contact me last year, and you know, we're really impromptu. They did a fundraiser last year, and we brought in about they brought in between toys and cash probably somewhere around $14,000. This year we were more prepared, and it was the Punisher's Motorcycle Club. They're a law enforcement based club. They brought in toys and cash again somewhere around, I would say, at least 27,000. And boys, I'm sorry if I'm wrong, it might be more. They do a really great job.
It's really amazing, because this really, I'm hearing this, is really not just a Christmas time organization. You guys work year round throughout the entire calendar.
Yes, sir. And, you know, I want to stress that this is a volunteer organization. So my pay goes up at least triple every year. So you know exactly what I'm making. Volunteers, you don't get paid. There's only, I think, maybe 20 or so people that actually get paid. They're in Virginia. And that is by the grace of God. Also, a lady that donated a good chunk of change. I don't remember where she was from. She was with some large organization. She donated several million dollars, I think around $15 or $18 million, with the caveat that that money, the interest and the dividends on that money, that will pay the salaries, the medical insurance, the retirements for those folks. So that's another way that that works out for us, you know, because we're one of the very few charities that 93 cents, it might be a little higher now, 94 cents goes of every dollar goes to toys. So, you know, locally, we might not get that close, but we do as best we can. And, you know, so we do. But nationally, we're one of the best charities out there. And I, before I forget, I am looking at a bike. We got over 215 bikes just from Winn-Dixie alone. Winn-Dixie, locally here, their district wanted to help us out. So they ended up buying about 430 bikes, and they split that between us and the Villages. And so we've been giving out bikes all day long. There's another organization, the Gettle Automotive Group here. They give out, they gave us about 40 or 50 bikes every year. I'm sure I'm missing someone else that gives us a lot of money. There was a guy that called me up the other day and said, "Hey, I want to mail you. I want to give you a check for $5,000." Well, I'll come get that. I'll mail it to you. You know, there's Walmart has a grant program. Some of the Walmarts give, some of them don't. Some of them give 1 year, they don't give the next year. But you know, Walmart is great. You know, if you got a Winn-Dixie, they're supporting Toys for Tots. I'd like to ask that if anybody at your work or anywhere, just ask them, "Hey, do you support Toys for Tots?" If they don't, ask them why not. There's probably a good reason why they don't, or they didn't know how. And if they don't, well, maybe they will. And if they do, well, then definitely please, you know, use your dollars at their stores.
So there are two ways to take part, either donations like you're talking about, and there are both individuals that donate as well as companies. But then there's the boxes where people can drop by toys. Describe what kind of toys and what is the what condition. They're not to be used, right? They're to be wrapped, correct?
No, they're new unwrapped toys.
Right.
That's what we need. It's changed throughout the years. So now it's new unwrapped toys, because if they wrap them, it looks great, but we have to unwrap them because we got to know what we're getting. And,
right.
You know, sometimes people label stuff and, you know, it might be a train to them, but to us, you know, it's more of a remote control vehicle. So, you know, we have to find that out. People donate all kinds of stuff to us. They kind of miss the Toys for Tots part, and, you know, we get a lot of stuff, but you know what? Anything we get donated, we have an outlet to get it to some people that are in need. We get a lot of stuff. So as far as donating a toy, Usually every year it's been, and it's been like that even this year, we are in need of little kids' toys, infant toys, I should say, 0 to 2 years old, boys and girls, and boys and girls toys 9 and up every year. That's pretty much like clockwork because it's very difficult to get those. And if you, I never noticed this, but, you know, there's the TV's television commercials, they're really pushing for just that specific age range from like 3 to 8 years old because that's where their money comes in. And that's fantastic. But, you know, it's tough to get the older kids' toys. So folks, they buy toys, they drop them off where we have them. This year, I really would like to thank the people that have been dropping the stuff off at our location because we've had a shortage of volunteers. So, you know, they'll get a box from us and they'll fill it up 3 or 4 times and they'll drop it off to us. And that is a huge help because, again, you know, there's only so many of us here. And it's just a wonderful thing that people give back. Some people, they just they can't give back with anything else, so they volunteer. And that works as well. You know, again, every little bit helps.
That's wonderful. We've got just enough time. Give us your email address and also your website.
Okay, the email is ocala.fl@toysfortots.org. And our website is ocala-fl.toysfortots.org.
Patrick Joint, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate it. You have a great day.
And don't forget, they are really hoping that you can make donations for this year's campaign. All you have to do is go through their website and help them out for this Christmas. We appreciate it. And that's all of our time for today. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Afternoons with Mike.